So I have a story for you today, but it's perhaps an odd one. I'm not quite sure. It starts with a Lord who is so good that we will simply call him Lord Good. Lord Good was so good that his goodness couldn't help but create other good things so that he could then be good to them. His goodness created a whole world, but the best of all the good things that good made were goodlings. They're absolutely adorable. But they were pretty tough little buggers, too. He gave them the world of goodness that he had made, and he continued to fill it with all kinds of good surprises just to delight them. And they loved him for it all. But love isn't just what you feel. Love is what you do. And so they asked him, "Lord Good, we know that you need nothing, but give us something we can do for you out of love." And so he did. Lord Good showed them the mountains and told them that these mountains were filled with gems and jewels. He told them that they could mine those gems, fashion them into whatever beautiful works of art they could think of, and offer them back to him. He had no need for the jewels, but he would treasure them as expressions of their love. But, Good said, "the one highest, greatest mountain you may not mine." Good himself knew that that highest peak hid the most stunning gems, and he had special plans for them. Plans that after the goodlings had spent years and even generations perfecting their craft in the other mountains, only then, together with him, they would mine that mountain and produce works of art that would be the crowning achievement of his goodness to them and their love for him. Until that time, mining that mountain would only destroy those most precious gems. I told you that the goodlings were tough little buggers, and boy, did they go to work. Driven by grateful love, they worked with dedication, energy, and creativity. Every problem they encountered only became an opportunity to come up with better, more ingenious solutions. The miners mined, the artists designed, the craftsmen crafted, and the support staff supported. And that good world became more and more beautiful as the goodness of Lord Good was reflected in the good work and good lives of the goodlings. As they mined, they noticed that the higher and starker the mountain, the better gems they found beneath. Mining these gems was much harder work, but it was even more rewarding. And the better gems likewise spurred the artisans on to their finest work. Over time, devising better and better ways to mine the highest, hardest peaks, the goodlings began to set their eyes on the highest, greatest mountain. You might wonder, what about their love for Lord Good? How could they disobey him if they loved him so much? Well, they had never displeased him and probably had no way to imagine what it feels like to grieve one you love. As we often say, you don't really know what you have until you lose it. In any case, they did disobey and began to mine that forbidden mountain. The roots of that mountain went as deep as it was high, and the rock was as hard as the cliffs above were steep. They found gems there that were so large and so stunning that all their previous work seemed like plastic imitations. But in a development straight out of Tolkien, they unleashed something buried deep in that stone, a terrible monster named Mott. No one could ever really say what Mott looked like, because the only thing anyone ever saw was an enormous, gaping black mouth that blotted out everything else in view. That first mining party was swallowed whole in an instant. The thing followed their trail back to the surface and was set loose in the world. For centuries after, the brightest of the Goodlings pondered where Mott could have come from. Most agreed that Lord Good could not have created something not good in their world. But some thought he might have if he had intended that it would remain locked deep in the stone where they would never even have known that it existed. Some suggested that perhaps it was their disobedience itself that had created Mott. Others wondered if perhaps even this monster might have been originally created good, but become what it was now through some disobedience of its own. In any case, from the day it appeared, Mott reigned over the Goodlings. It didn't sit on a throne or tell them what to do, but it reigned in another way. It reigned through fear. No one knew where Mott was, what it looked like, or when it might show up. But when it did show up, Mott always swallowed whole. And Mott was never satisfied. Some of the Goodlings disappeared at night, others in broad daylight. Sometimes it would swallow many, and sometimes just one. At times, whole villages were swallowed at once. There was never any pattern. No one could tell when Mott would show up. And so the Goodlings lived in fear. And fear changed everything in their world. It was the same world, full of all the same good things as before, but the shadow of death hung over it all now. Looking out at a world full of beauty, they always had to wonder if Mott lurked behind that tree or under that stone. Soon they had trouble seeing good at all. The work in the mines that used to be a joyful expression of love to their Lord became burdensome toil in the fear that Mott waited for them there. They began to resent Lord Good, seeing themselves as his slaves and their works of art as some sort of sacrifice that he constantly demanded of them. Some even came to think of Lord Good as the hated enemy and began to talk of Mott as the one that could release them from their slavery. But even these still lived in the fear that Mott would come for them today, not tomorrow. But the more the Goodlings grew to hate and resent Lord Good, the more he loved them. He continued to fill their world with good things, even if they didn't see them, and continued to watch over them with compassion, even though they resented him. But he did more than that. He would not simply uncreate Mott, because once something is, it is. Nothing created can truly cease to exist because then it would be nothing. And nothing is impossible with Lord Good. He did something that no one would have thought he could do, even though they say he can do anything. And even though we try to describe what he did, there is no understanding what it actually was. But it was as though he took part of himself and separated it from himself without actually changing himself or becoming separated. I suppose it's something like the way that a child is formed in the womb from the being of the mother, except that it's really nothing like that. But whatever it was that he did, when he was done, there before him stood a Goodling. Except that Goodling was Lord Good himself. And good sent him into the world he created, causing him to be born and grow up the way all the goodlings were. He worked in the mines and shared fully in everything the goodlings experienced. But he was able to see in a way that the goodlings had lost that the world was still full of the good gifts of Lord Good. He could see what the world was intended to be before Mott was unleashed. And so he came to hate with all his heart the one thing that could be hated while still holding on to the pure love of good. He hated Mott. And so one day he announced to all that he would kill Mott. Some were impressed by his sincerity, but most scoffed at him. "Who do you think you are? Mott swallows bigger, better men than you every day." Some even said that to fight Mott was to go against the will of Lord Good, for whatever is couldn't be without him allowing it. If it was the will of Lord Good that they should all be fodder for Mott, then the right thing is to resign yourself to it. They would say with this strange pseudo-piety things like, "Mott swallows all." Or those who thought themselves philosophers, "What is a goodling but a mottling?" But he would simply repeat that he would kill Mott. Everyone seemed eager to see him meet Mott. Some who resented him were eager to see Mott show up and swallow him in a moment, this upstart who doesn't seem to know his place in the world. Others seemed to hope that in the moment that Mott arrived for him, he would suddenly be transformed into something bigger and more powerful than Mott itself, clamp that gaping mouth shut, and chain it forever. He didn't seem to be seeking Mott out, but he wasn't hiding from it either. And one day, Mott came for him. Right before the eyes of so many others, that big, gaping black mouth reared up out of nowhere, and as it had swallowed millions of goodlings before, those jaws of death snapped shut and swallowed this one too. Those who had imagined him turning into some superhero kicked themselves for being so gullible, but most just thought, "Well, that's that." Except that that wasn't that. This black emptiness that existed only to swallow and to swallow whole, this personification of death that had swallowed cities and armies without the least hesitation, clamped its jaws down on just another goodling, but then found itself trying to swallow Lord Good himself. And Mott choked. With the creator of the world stuck in his throat like a chicken bone, death died. And as death died, this goodling, who in some unknowable way was Lord Good himself, emerged victoriously from the black hole that was Mott. And to close, I'd like to read from Hebrews chapter 2. "But we see Jesus, who was made a little lower than the angels, now crowned with glory and honor because he suffered death, so that by the grace of God he might taste death for everyone. In order to bring many sons to glory, it was fitting that God, for whom and through whom everything exists, should make the author of their salvation perfect through suffering. Since the children have flesh and blood, he too shared in their humanity, so that by his death he might destroy him who holds the power of death, that is, the devil, and free those who all their lives were held in slavery by their fear of death." Amen.